And then we're going to have some time for Q&A. And what we're going to do is, in a way, come back to what I did yesterday. We're going to be doing a prolonged period of the Amitabha mantra as a practice in itself. And feeling in our body, seeing what it does to our energy. I can feel the vibrations, and I do encourage you to really go for it and do it at home and not just listen. Yeah, because otherwise you won't have that experience. Yeah. And then as it fades away, we'll just have another period of just sitting, just being open, being receptive, being relaxed, being aware of whatever is arising, passing away in our experience, whether that's our physical experience of our body, our experience of our more subtle energy body, our emotional body, our thoughts, feelings, whatever's arising, passing away, just having that openness, just being aware without trying to do anything to it. Yeah, just sitting. And hopefully by doing the mantra, previously, we'll have actually got a sense of being in our body, being embodied, and being open and receptive in another kind of a way. So, Amitabha, we'll do the plain Amitabha mantra. And just for those of you who may not be familiar, Amitabha is one of the five Jinnas or the five archetypal Buddhas. He's the Buddha of the West. He's associated with meditation very strongly and also with infinite light and infinite compassion. I think his name means infinite light, so it's appropriate on a retreat with the title Our Bodies Break Light that we're calling on Amitabha. And he's also very much associated with what they call the Pure Land schools of meditation. Every Buddha is supposed to create a Buddha land, a pure land where people can be reborn and their awakening, their enlightenment is assured, and the conditions are very positive. Yeah. And we actually are existing in what's known as a Buddha field, but an impure Buddha field. But the pure lands are when everything is, well, as one can. We don't want to get into all that. Polarization, but anyway, one of the things about Amitabha is it said that if you call on his name, then you can be reborn in his pure land, which is a land of joy, Sukhavati, land of happiness. So, if you just want to get into your meditation posture, because we'll be doing this mantra for a prolonged period of time and then going straight into the just sitting. Well, yeah. Well, at least 10 minutes, maybe a bit more. We'll see. Om Ami Devahri. Om Ami Devahri. Ami Devahri. Om 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 Ami Devahri. Vahri. So if you feel there's something that you'd like to share or ask, particularly around meditation or around retreats, you've got some space now, so just unmute yourself and go for it. So it looks like Zoe wants to say something. And if anyone else wants to, you can put your hand up or post in the chat and we'll try and get to you later. So Zoe, where are you? Yeah.
Hi, thank you. I was telling the group how I've hit a wall of apathy, and I was struck, as I always am, at the beginning of the retreat about the around the power and benefit of dropping a question in during meditation to stimulate dialogue. And I always think it's a great idea, and I never have done it. And so I dare to ask myself today, so how come, Zoe, how comes you don't drop that question in? Why are you not stimulating that dialogue? And the main answer was, well, I'm not sure I really want to know. I'm not really convinced I really want to hear the answer about how my body is kind of responding to that event or those choices. And so I was left, initially, I was left kind of feeling a bit ashamed and a bit sad that this was my approach to my body. And then it kind of flowed into feeling a bit disappointed and a bit like, oh God, this is another thing I've got to work on. Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's face it with love. And that quickly sort of morphed into a sort of grumpy teenager, and it was interesting. There was lots of aspects. There was a very small young part that kind of wanted someone to come and make it a bit better, and I had a sense that's actually maybe why I come on retreat. And then there was also a bit of a sort of grumpy teenager who was kind of like, didn't really want to do the work, and eventually I was sort of left with this sort of embittered, slightly grumpy middle-aged woman with her arms crossed watching a bunch of people singing Kumbaya. So it's been a bit of an experience, but that the beauty of the time I've had to think about it is just seeing how that apathy, how that sort of lack of confidence, oh, is it too little too late? Not really convinced that my efforts will make any real impact, how that reflects just in my relationships in my life and also in much of what I see in the outer world. Anyway, and it was very nice to share it with my group, who didn't flinch or put me on mute, but actually it was yeah, quite a nice experience to be able to share them. So that was where I was today. Thank you.
Thank you. So I suppose to me it seems like one of the things you're working with there is the classic hindrance of doubt and indecision. And sometimes it's good just to actually, identify that's what's going on, and that's likely to be a pattern in your everyday life as much as in your meditation, because we bring our tendencies, our habits, our approaches to our meditation practice. Particularly the way that it kind of undermines you about is there any point and all this kind of stuff. But I suppose there's also the thing that does there need to be a point? Like we can be quite goal orientated. And can what would it be like just to allow yourself to meditate without feeling you need to make progress or reacting against having to do something, and just be there? I mean, it's like, you talked about dropping a question in. Well, I mean, I think for me, that's more what I would call reflection. And you can get in a meditative state of mind, and you can drop in a question and reflect on it. And there are some meditations where we do actually consciously drop in some reflection, like for instance, the Upekkha Bhavana, when we're trying to cultivate equanimity as part of the practice. But in a way, I think that's different to meditating and the kind of meditating that we've been sort of encouraging people to do on this retreat. You know, just being with the body, being with the sensations, being with whatever's arising and passing away. It's trying to make something happen, isn't it? When we do that. Even if we're. So there's that ambivalence, isn't there, about one not wanting the answer, but at the same time, it's rather than allowing whatever it is to emerge in its own time when it feels ready. It's sort of like trying to more make something happen by doing that kind of reflection and dropping in the question, wanting to get the answer. So I think it's perfectly valid to do that, and it can be really useful to do that. But there's also a part of me that doesn't seem to be wanting to do that. So I would maybe just listen to that part and then just see what it's like being a bit more receptive, and then seeing what. You know, what you do want, or what your deeper self does want to be doing at the moment. I don't know. What do you reckon, Paramananda?
Well, when I was listening to Zoe, I mean, what came to mind really quite strongly was, you know, it's never too late to bloom. It's never too late. I've seen people do it on their deathbed quite often. No, it's never too late, you know. You're opening, it can't be too late. It's always worth it, I think. Any point in your life, yeah, I think, yeah, any point in your life is worth it, you know. I wouldn't worry about it being too late. I mean, I know that feeling, you know, and let things go by, you know, but I think one of the wonderful things about meditation is that it's not like that really. You know, you can always open more, you can always move towards love, you know, for yourself and for others in the world. I mean, I broadly agree with what the leader was saying. I know what I was saying this morning. I was being quite kind of opinionated about what meditation is. But of course, you know, in a way, meditation is what we make it. And I think I like the idea. I do think there's a real place for coming into dialogue with ourselves, you know, even if it's just, you know, even if it's just sort of asking a part of your body to relax, I think things like apathy or doubt, they're also potential. Well, as you've demonstrated, the way they open up into some degree of insight if you do pursue them. And though actually, I think the idea is that we don't do anything and just see what emerges. But of course, that's a lot easier said than done. So, well, I don't know what else to say really, but yeah. Do you feel less apathetic now? What are you left with after that?
I suppose I'm left with that. I suppose I'm left with that. At what stage to you know, stimulate in some ways, and what stage to allow to be, and yeah. I mean, it's ongoing. It's
I mean, I certainly wouldn't overthink it, really. Just, you know, I think sometimes we meditate, we've just got to follow our nose, really. You know, whether it conforms to, yeah, we just, yeah, you find out, don't you, if it's useful or not, really. Yeah. I mean, you know, you put the basics in place, don't we? Put the basics in place. You know, people, I've been talked to hundreds, if not thousands, of meditators over the years. You know, people do all sorts of weird and wonderful things in meditation. Some of them, you know, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. Straight away, what you do is what you do. Then, you know, have a sense of whether it's working or not. I would be interested in apathy. I know it's difficult to be interested in apathy by definition, but in another way, you know, it's quite interesting. It is, as the leader said, you know, sort of classical sort of indecision and doubt in a way. But on the other hand, in the Zen tradition, they say little doubt, little enlightenment, big doubt, big enlightenment.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you both.
Okay, I can't see the question. Sorry, I've been asked to ask a question, but I'm trying to find what the question is.
See the answer.
Maybe we post it again in the chat and then I can ask it. But one of the things that I was thinking of listening to you just now, Paramananda, was around, you know, the idea of that where we have all these seeds, you know, that are actions and where we plant these seeds, but we've got absolutely no idea at what point they might begin to grow or sprout or blossom, you know, be there for ages and at a sudden point when they do. And in a way, we're just creating conditions and conditions, and then at a certain point, we reap the fruit of it. So it kind of links a bit to what Paramananda was saying about it not being a quest of causality with meditation, but more about the conditionality and the conditions. Because it's like sometimes we like to think, oh, if I do this, then this will happen. If I do this, then this will happen. And to some extent, when we put certain conditions in place, things can arise, and then we can think, oh, yeah, that's, you know, we can get a bit simplistic about it or a bit, what do you call it? My brain is going more transactional around it, you know, but actually it's much more mysterious than that. But I do think, like, the times when I have the real breakthroughs or insights or something else happens, it's not because of what just happened in that particular sit. It's because of, you know, my life up till that point and all the meditations I've done up to that point that have created the conditions for that to happen in that moment. I don't know if that resonates with anybody.
Yeah, thanks, Bodhi Leader. I think that's a really important, it's Catherine, important thing to raise is that we can't always know, you know, when upheavals are going to arise or what they're in connection with, you know. I mean, from my perspective, it sort of comes into play, it was like from a karmic point of view, karma and conditions sort of arising together. But I kind of, through with what I'm working with at the moment, the danger of that is that when these sort of incidents or things that you can't really explain arise, the mind wants to project and pin it on a story or give it a reason, or this is happening because of this or because of that. So it's actually coming into being more of an observer at the moment and sort of letting it all flow, because I'm just reifying the old storylines and then they're creating more grooves and then it's sort of going back down the hindrances again. So Because so, I mean, I have sort of quite a lucid nightlife, to say. But like really this morning, I could really sense in that my body just felt so stressed. I mean, I carried for years. It was mostly upper body, Paramananda, and I think my legs were dead, like what you were saying, completely dead. And like at the moment, I've got such great conditions. I have no reason to feel some of these emotional, visceral feelings that, you know, I'm feeling. So it's like, oh yeah, it's that thing happening again, and like letting it flow. But and I just want you, you know, the mind just wants to splatter labels all over it and then judge yourself, give others a hard time, give yourself a hard time. It's you're just going down the rabbit hole. But, you know, sometimes we do need to have an understanding of what's happened for us. But then other times it just seems like a load of old rubbish. You know, I think I said in the group, it's like I'd become the director of my own neurological theatre play. You know, it's just a show. And it was great, actually, when you started off with the mantra, the bin man came outside to collect the rubbish. And I just thought, well, wouldn't it just be great if like this stuff could just kind of go off on the van and be recycled somewhere, you know? But anyway, thanks very much. I'm getting a lot from this retreat and from what others are bringing in as well. Thank you. I just wanted to share that because that's a difficult point of working at the moment for myself anyway. Thanks, and what Zoe brought in as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you. I think one of the things that a lot of us struggle with for years is somewhere got this idea that our ego sense should be gratified through doing this. Like we're trying to make our ego better, you know, but egos are by nature insecure and unstable. You know, that's just how they are. So stability has got to be found somewhere else, if that makes sense, you know. And I think that's a radical difference, you know, between. I mean, this is a very dodgy distinction. You've got to take this with a big pinch of salt in a way and not take it too literally. But meditation isn't really about ego adjustment, you know. It's not really about trying to make things right. You know, it's about actually having a different fundamental sense of what it means to be, you know, that our being isn't actually our ego, you know. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but, you know, the ego by its very nature is never going to be gratified. We've got to shift the kind of center to somewhere else. Of course, this is just the way of speaking, I know, but it has got a certain experiential reality to it, I think. And unfortunately, our culture is so concerned with our ego needs and demands and things. It's difficult.
I think the word that keeps coming up for me is really around confidence. Just that sense you talk about stability. I think maybe that's sort of what I'm thinking, is that just that sense of, yeah, okay, this is here, you know, all of these things are here, they're coming up, and that okay, maybe not a well of love is rushing up to meet the apathy and the grumpy old woman, but that there is confidence to continue, which is obviously the case because I'm still here and I'm sharing it. I think it's just a moment of falter that I also sense, maybe more so as I look out into the world sometimes, it feels kind of interchangeable.
Well, I think one of the things that's really important as meditators is that we do develop confidence in ourselves as practitioners, and that we also, in a way, take ownership over our own practice, you know, and that actually we know our minds and we know what we need to do. So we've had the teachings, we've been, you know, given basic structures, ways of working with things, maybe been on retreats and had advice, and it can be helpful, but ultimately there's a point where you need to just disregard everything that any teacher is telling to you and then try and work out what is right for you, you know, because what is right for me might not be the same. I can sort of think, well, I've heard people with this sort of, you know, talking about something similar, and I've had something similar, but it may not be what you need, you know. So I think you need to be confident enough to think, okay, I'm going to go my own way and I'm going to explore this, you know, in my own way. I think that, you know, we talk about working in meditation and, you know, that there's certain skills in it, and there, you know, the discipline, the establishing that stability does maybe require having a bit of awareness of what our tendencies are, what we're working with, what is helpful and all that kind of stuff before we can do all the sort of letting go of everything else and just being, I think. But when you have been doing that for a while, you do get a sort of sense of, well, I've been here before, you know, this was helpful, or what would it be like if I do something, this is a habit, what happens if I do something different, kind of thing. And just sort of trying to listen to oneself really deeply, to be open and receptive, and then see, you know, what might emerge. You know, and I think listening to the body has its wisdom, the body has a memory. So things that have happened in the past sometimes will come up later in our meditation because of that. I also kind of, I don't know, I'm somebody that when I first started, used to go up and down, be in complete states of crisis, and then up there having all these blissful experiences. And then it sort of leveled out a lot more. And now I, you know, have a different kind of a practice, but which can include both of them in a way. But what I think I learned to trust that my psyche, or whatever you want to call it, knew what I could cope with, you know. And it was, you know, something would come up, I'd work with it, you know, in meditation, in counselling, in my life. And I'd integrate it and get there, and then I'd be in, you know, and I'd be in a really positive state, and it was just like, oh yeah, you can deal with this now, and something else would come up, kind of thing. It was just, yeah. So, but I think I learned to trust that I had the capacity to be with what came up, you know. And I think one of the things that having a Dharmic perspective and, you know, having practices like meditation, you know, can help us with that. Okay, okay, Sasana Jyoti, I still can't see your question. Could you actually put it in again? Okay, in the meantime, we've got a question from Sheena about, is confidence faith? Well, I think in the way I was talking about it just now, it's not Exactly, but they are clearly linked. I mean, there's the word shraddha in Buddhism that's often translated as either faith or confidence, which has a slightly different meaning, I think. It's more about, what inspires us, what we're drawn to, that kind of truth, that response. I think Sangreshi talked about us responding to what's ultimate in ourselves, responding to what's ultimate in the universe, or, the kind of thing that the truth of the Dharma or the Buddha or his teachings resonates with us on a certain level, in whatever way it is. And that capacity for faith, connects us with our inspiration, our aspiration, and I think kind of the beauty and something that we're moving towards of value that is meaningful to us. Even when things are difficult, there's still that fact, there can still be that sense of that there. And I think we get more confidence in the teachings and in the Dharma through practice and by, in a way, testing it out in practice in our lives and experience. And, does meditation help? Does the Dharma, do the teachings of the Dharma make sense? Do they apply to what I can see? Can I see impermanence of all these dukkha? Those sorts of things. Is it helpful having that teaching, that perspective? And the more that we find that it helps us with our lives and change and transformation, then I think the more confidence we get in it. So there's a very close link between faith and confidence in that sense. Maybe it was, but I suppose I was thinking a bit more just on a basic level of we can end up not having much self-confidence or self-esteem and in our everyday lives, and because of whatever our particular conditions or patterns or what we've internalized about ourselves are, and we can take that to our meditation practice and other practice, and then we have those internal voices that can undermine us or prevent us from, in a way, exploring our potential. If that makes any sense. And I'm just seeing it's actually time to stop. So thank you everybody for practicing again and for the questions and things people have brought. And if there's anything that's sort of very live for you, you could always post it in the chat or I guess email it in, and if we get a chance we can sort of see if we can bring it in. So just wanted to say that tomorrow we've decided to have a sort of quieter day. Like if you were on a physical retreat, we might have had some time in silence. We probably have at least one day or a couple of days in silence. It's a bit different when we're on an online retreat and you may be living with family and friends and you switch off now and then you're going to talk to a lot of people. But just that thing of having maybe less input from us on the retreat and getting less in that discursive state of mind and being, in a way dropping down and just not being so much with our cognitive thinking, analytical mind. Yeah. So we're not going to have groups tomorrow, and also we're not going to be having the Q&A, but we're going to have an afternoon of practice from 4 to 5:30 tomorrow. Would probably be a combination of meditation and ritual. So just to give you a heads up there.
Sorry, did you say 4 or 4:30?
4. Okay, so we'll end there. If you want to unmute and say goodbye or whatever, feel free, and see you tomorrow.
Yeah. Goodbye, thank you.